WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk, your Labor Day edition of Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I will be here with you until 8 o'clock this evening. We have a fantastic talk show lined up for you. We'll start things off with the county update. Checking in this week is Plymouth County Commissioner Jared Valenzuela. We'll speak with Jared a little bit about where things stand with ARPA and the county, as we know that they've been slowly putting the framework in place to be able to distribute those funds once the CARES Act funding has been exhausted by the end of this year. We'll talk to him about that. Following Jared, we have local business owner and supporter of this radio program, Richard Rosen, will stop by. As you may or may not know, but McGuigan's Pub, other than serving fantastic food, also has an annual event called the McGuigan's Pub 5K, and it's because of a brief hiatus, it could not be run last year because of the pandemic. Well, it returns this year, September 26th, it'll step off at 12 noon. Richard will give us the details on that, that event and some of the festivities that are going to follow after the race. Hour number two. We will speak with managing news editor in the WATD newsroom, Christine James. As I'm sure everybody is well aware, that later this week we will remember the events that took place on 9/11, September 11th, 2001. I thought it was important to speak to a journalist, somebody who would be able to give me something, give me their thoughts and their vision on the events that happened and how we've also kind of viewed the annual observance of this date in history. And looking through the lens, the journalistic lens of Christine James's eyes and getting her take on the, you know, what happened that day, where she was at that time, and much more. So stay tuned for that. You will not want to miss that discussion. And then we'll close out the show. We'll do a little bit of a NFL kickoff show, per se, or segment. I have Kerry J. Byrne. Of course, Kerry, the founder of coldhardfootballfacts.com. I've had many, many conversations with him over the years about football and some of the stats that are used to kind of understand where teams are going, what direction they're going, whether they're going to be contenders or they're just going to kind of, you know, languish away at the bottom of the league. And we're going to talk a little bit about, is Tom Brady going to repeat, you know, in a Tampa Bay Buccaneers jersey? Will they repeat and win the Super Bowl? How will the Patriots look, knowing that they have a new quarterback under center? All that and more coming up with an NFL preview with Kerry J. Byrne. Right now, though, time for us to take a final look at the roadways being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshop.com. There's locations: Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now Hudson, New Hampshire.
Well, thanks, Kevin. Heading off Cape, it's smooth sailing on the Sagamore and the Bourne. Route 3 north, pockets of congestion from Route 123 to Route 18. Expressway northbound's an easy drive from Braintree up into Boston. No issues on 93 either way between Braintree and Canton. This report is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. This week, save at Whole Foods Market on animal welfare certified boneless beef sirloin steaks for $7.99 a pound through September 7th, plus an extra 10% off for Prime members while supplies last. Traffic on the 9s every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Mallory, this has been, like, the best worst summer ever.
Why do you say that, Jeffrey?
The weather.
Oh,
the
weather. The weather. Mm-hmm. The boat sure looks great in the backyard.
The retro 1987 Quadrajet 350 Mark Cruiser.
That's not currently working.
What about playing your cousin's golf tournament?
It did not stop raining.
All
the
day.
Entire day. Well, Jeff, at least it was close to the new Brennan Smoke Shop in Hudson, New Hampshire.
Ah, that's what makes it the best worst summer ever. Hudson, New Hampshire, Brennan Smoke Shop.
Your pal Joe Healy just installed the signs.
My pal from high school, Mass Sign and Decal. Well, this is New England, and honestly, I thought commuting to New Hampshire every day in the rain was going to be a big deal, but it's really not that far.
It's really not that bad of a ride.
It's really not that long of a ride to tax-free Hudson, New Hampshire. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in the world! Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and as always, proper ID is required.
Have
Happy a better summer!
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk, WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, we start off quick out of the gate with the county updates, Plymouth County updates, and we'll get the State House report. And what's fantastic about this gives us an opportunity to share what's going on with Plymouth County government and provide a level of transparency. We know that over the years, folks have asked the question, what is it that, you know, the county commissioners do? What does county government do? What is done with our tax dollars? Or what is this layer of government doing for us? So the idea behind creating this county update and talking with different members of county government is to provide that information. So when you go to the ballot box, when we have a political forum, you don't have to worry about, you know, what it is that they do. You'll be aware. Joining us this week to talk a little bit about what's going on with the county is Plymouth County Commissioner Jared Valenzuela, also host of the JV Team Heard every Wednesday night starting at 6:15 p.m. Sir, how are you?
You're welcome, and how are you?
I'm pretty good.
We got to get you back on the JV team again. You did a half segment with us. That was awesome.
I got to tell you, it was funny. I tuned in to your show last week, and I didn't realize it. So this past radio show on Monday Night Talk, I have a cousin who sells real estate.
Okay.
And I didn't realize that there's a very I almost could hear the similarities between my cousin Adam and Corey. As to their, you know, how passionate they are about doing the best for folks who are looking to buy and sell homes. So,
no, absolutely, and you know, I got my real estate license too. I don't do it nearly as much as Corey, your cousin, but I'll tell you, one of the things about, you know, real estate, especially right now, if you're representing sellers, if you get everything priced right and your house is good to go, there's not a lot of, I don't want to say not a lot of work, but it's just really not a lot of work. The house is going to go, and you know, it's a fantastic time to sell. And you know, as you hear Corey say, and I know there's a lot of other agents out there that do the same thing. You know, especially if you're going to go buy a new home, certainly we want to make sure you get to keep as much of your hard-earned equity as you can, because you know you've spent a lot of time in your home, you've built up that equity, and you know it's going to sell quick. You know, it's not like in years past where there was. You know, there's marketing, there's work involved, but it's not, you know, passing out flyers like it used to be. So, but yeah, no, it's real estate taught, which is good for sellers. You know, I feel bad for some of my buyers right now, unfortunately, but, you know, that's the way it goes. And, you know, we'll find something, you know, for them too. And it always ends up working out in the end.
The last time you were on the program, and it might have been the previous time we had The chairman of the Plymouth County Commissioners, or Greg Antleon. The conversation was previously that the CARES Act monies are going to be going by the wayside, that they, you know, you're slowly seeing those monies, you know, the being distributed, and that we're on to ARPA now, the American Rescue Plan Act, put in place by the current administration, and that the county was ready, had decided we are going to get involved with this, and we're going to do exactly, you know, the similar things that we did with the CARES Act in giving, providing money. Now, there are different, and I think last time you described the differences, there are definitely stark differences, but
absolutely,
in the end, you're still going to make sure that your membership, the 27 communities that make up Plymouth County, are going to get all their monies. It's not going to be a matter of they get 20% of it, and then the 80% ended up going off to somewhere else that state government decides.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. You know, of course, a lot of people are sort of really working towards or pining to get to the American Rescue Plan Act. But one of the things, you know, before I start highlighting some of those differences, we're close to having a program rolled out. And of course, you mentioned Chairman Hanley, Commissioner Wright. Have to give credit, obviously, to Treasurer O'Brien and his entire team for the hard work his team has done to get a team put together. You know, one of the things you pointed out, and I know we talked about it before, what really motivated us to do the American Rescue Plan Act was, you know, the state at first was guaranteeing, administration and finance was, the executive branch was, the governor's office was, assuring us if Plymouth County doesn't administer ARPA, excuse me, those monies are going to go back to the 27 member communities, which, if you recall, 18 months ago was not a guarantee with the CARES Act. They could not guarantee that that money was going to come back with the CARES Act. When the legislature voted to take control of the American Rescue Plan from the governor and put it in their control, I just couldn't fathom Brockton going before a legislative committee hearing to justify what they want to spend their money on. So that was the reason why we did that. So the American Rescue Plan with the county right now is still in formulation. Certainly we have an idea of what our costs are going to be. And we are, I'm certain, considering how much more verbose and, you know, certainly there's a couple of, I hate to say landmines, but it's, there's a few more areas with the American Rescue Plan that communities or even the county could screw up, frankly. So obviously we've had to increase a little bit of what the potential, and none of the numbers are firm yet, but the potential administrative cost. But just for perspective, with the CARES Act, we did the CARES Act for less than 1%. Compare that to the 3-5% national average, to a point where the White House has actually lauded Plymouth County. They've lauded Treasurer O'Brien, the commissioners, and the entire team in the administration office for being able to actually do this program at as low of a price. I mean, literally less than 1% of our total monies. And excuse me, you mentioned monies potentially not going back to Plymouth County. And one of the things that I think I need to highlight with the CARES Act, and we've been before select board meetings and selectmen meetings across the county now. Say we were at the Brockton City Council a couple of weeks ago, Pembroke Select Board, Select Board last week. I had a couple of folks say to me, because as you've pointed out, there's plenty of detractors of county government up and down all levels of government. And somebody had made a comment that they would love to see a comparison or an audit of the state performance with the CARES Act versus the county. We had heard anecdotally from other communities outside of Plymouth County that we were delivering money faster, we were easier to deal with, and that our towns were actually capped at more money. Well, I didn't realize just how staggering that was, Kevin. So the award for Plymouth County was in total $90 million. When I went down and did a comparison of every town in Plymouth County, all 26 in the city of Brockton, I should say, those towns were capped at $90 million. The total for comparable sized communities outside of Plymouth County, $45 million. Similar size communities, have Plymouth County not done the CARES Act, every community in Plymouth County would have received half the money. And that's a lot of money. And one of the things that I like to really highlight even more so to just fully demonstrate how strong this program was for Plymouth County. The city of Brockton's cap was $18 million. They've received about 75%. They're at about $13 million. The last $5 million, I believe, is in process. Sorry, Treasurer, if I got that number wrong. But the next nearest city to them is New Bedford. They were capped at $8 million, and they've only received 24% of that. So they've received $2 million out of their $8 million, whereas Brockton has already received $13 million out of their $18 million. Even more so, Brockton, at our last check presentation, surpassed the city of Springfield, the third largest city, who was only capped at $13 million. And when the program is done, Brockton will have received more money than Worcester. So the CARES Act program, and you can go down the line, all 27 communities, Abington, $2.5 million, Northbridge, $1.4 million. My favorite comparison is always Whitman, $2.3 million. Swampscott, the hometown of Governor Baker, $1.3 million. So I always use past performance as an indicator of future success. The Plymouth County CARES Act program has been a resounding success, and I'm confident in the team that's being put together that the American Rescue Plan Act will be as well.
Yeah, we're speaking with Jared Valenzuela. Jared is a Plymouth County commissioner, and we're chatting about not only the CARES Act money, but the moving forward, what's going to happen with the American Rescue Plan Act, where the county is going to be the distributor of some of those funds, pretty much the same way that they were for the CARES Act funding. Is it possible, hearing you kind of talk about the comparisons and the fluidity that Plymouth County has been able to get out the money to its membership, to, you know, the 26 towns in the city of Brockton, is that part of the reason, if you just speculate, if you just spitball, that's why the state didn't necessarily want another, you know, another level of government taking control of it? Is it a matter of getting egg on its face because the performance would be better, or just a matter of it just wanted to have all the eggs in one basket and that's it?
Yeah, honestly, and I don't blame the state for this. I mean, obviously, in you know, Massachusetts, whenever you say county government, most people go, how, what? You know, I had somebody ask me a question last week, why was Plymouth County the only county to do it? And the first part of that answer was half the counties in Massachusetts don't even exist anymore. So I don't think it was anything necessarily nefarious on the state's part. I think what we were able to do in Plymouth County was demonstrate why, frankly, county government prevails in almost every other part of the country. We're not as large as a state, and we're obviously bigger than a town. So we're able to provide more localized, centralized service, but still have some of the strength, well, counties in other states, I should say, but Plymouth County as well. I like to say we may be small but mighty. We're able to still be in tune and in connection with our local municipalities and offer some of the flexibility with some of the things we wanted to do. I think the state, just honestly, and I think, Kevin, you just said it perfectly, they want all the eggs in one basket, and I don't blame them for that. You know, the other eligible counties chose, for their reasons, not to participate in CARES. And again, I know it's been talked about multiple times on these airwaves and on this program, but, you know, when Chairman Pallotta, previous Chairman Pallotta, Commissioner Hanley, Commissioner Wright were told by the state that they wouldn't guarantee all the money that was eligible for Plymouth County would come back to Plymouth County. And they rightfully made the decision that was in the best interest of the towns and city. And again, not only have we given out, or will give out more money, but we'll have done it faster. I mean, New Bedford's at 25%. I think the last I checked, Swampscott was at maybe 60-something percent. Whitman was higher than that. So, you know, we're giving out more money faster, and we're doing it cheaper than anybody else, not just in Massachusetts, but nationwide. So I don't think, in all honesty, I don't think the state looked at it and thought that Plymouth County would embarrass them or put egg on their face. And that was by far and away not even anything that crept into our minds, well, my predecessor board's minds, when they took CARES. The noble reason they took the CARES Act funding last year, a year and a half ago, was genuinely because it was in the best interest of the member communities of Plymouth County.
While we have a few minutes left here with you, so here we are in the month of September. What provisions have been put in place? Where are we at right now to be able to, you know, make this shift from CARES Act to ARPA and begin the processing of requests for funding and distribution?
Yeah, so one of the things that I always, before I start talking about ARPA, is to always joke, the CARES Act is our firstborn. Don't forget about it. You know, I'm a firstborn, so I understand. No, I'm kidding. But the CARES Act's our firstborn. Don't forget about it. It runs out December 31st, so the American Rescue Plan is a three-year program to get your projects in, and then you have 5 years to finish it out. It's a long time. There's no need to hurry into ARPA. The CARES Act is still there. As I already may have said, there's about $7 million that we've submitted home that I think we're going to release. I will tell you the last thing I want to do, so to any member community that is listening right now, the last thing I or my colleagues want to do is give even a penny back to the federal government. So please, 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 please use up your CARES Act money before looking into ARPA. As we do transition into ARPA, though, I think we're starting to realize that there's going to be a lot of opportunities to be a little more forward thinking. I think, as I've talked about, we are joining with Norfolk and Bristol counties in some different capacities. You know, we're certainly going to be sharing in some of the legal costs and some of the other costs that are going to be associated with the compliance of this program, which is fantastic. We're very excited to be working with Norfolk and Bristol. We've been sitting down with them, having regular conversations. Barnstable County has expressed some interest, but of course, Barnstable County, they have a charter. They're just a little bit different in terms of their structure than Plymouth, Bristol, and Norfolk. So we're excited for that. We're excited to have a plan rollout. There will be a website. Towns will see what their caps and shares are. And it's been great. I've been having conversations with some communities. Every community that I go into with the CARES check, I certainly try to get a temperature for what they are thinking about doing with ARPA money. And it's exciting to hear a lot of communities talk about doing water infrastructure, sewer infrastructure. You know, that seems to me, from my personal interpretation, the highest and best use. But, you know, I want every community to know that Plymouth County, with the American Rescue Plan, we'll stand at the ready to serve whatever they want to do, whether it be revenue replacement, hazard duty pay, or whichever part of the program that they feel that they would like to participate in. But there's a lot of exciting pieces to the American Rescue Plan Act, and we're excited to just continue to provide this to Plymouth County. You know, and as I often quip, there's a fantastic news diva at WATD who likes to ask, "What does it do, or should it stay?" I think just the simple fact that our towns receive twice as much money through the CARES Act, they're going to get more money through us through the American Rescue Plan Act, and that is going to be a tangible benefit for the taxpayers of Plymouth County. And I know the treasurer and my fellow commissioners are extremely excited to be able to embark on this.
Would you say it's a source of pride as an elected official, an elected county official, to prove the value of county government and to prove is probably the wrong word, but just to showcase, flex your muscle as a government body?
It is. You know, certainly, Kevin, I've followed county government for a long time. I've always been a believer in it. I've been a big believer in regionalizing services. I think there's, you know, on the local level, a lot of redundancies that cost a lot of money. And then when the state is doing something, it's going to be a little bit more expensive as well. It is a source of pride. I can say certainly for myself, to be able to instill, first of all, the confidence. And again, as I often say when I talk about the success of CARES, it seems a little tacky because I came in halfway through the program. The credit for starting CARES and getting it going, of course, it goes with the treasurer in the previous board. But that said, I think I've been in long enough now that I've done just as much work as my predecessor, Dan Pallotta, did. And if he listens, he'll call and yell at me for saying that once I get off here. But yeah, it is. It really is a source of pride to be able to go into our towns. And, you know, I'm not sure if I alluded to being at the Pembroke Select Board meeting, but yep. Their town manager, Mr. Chenard, quite literally stated they would not have been able to balance their budget without a lot of these CARES Act funds. Every community, everybody, top to bottom, was really thrown for a loop. There was no playbook for handling a global worldwide pandemic and everything that came with it. And I think it's great that Plymouth County, in the midst of all that, was able to find something that it could do that made it relevant, made it useful, it made it matter. And I think that's extremely important. We mattered, and we have mattered for the last year and a half for our communities. And you know, look, and Plymouth County's already been doing fantastic programs to begin with. We administer the Burn Grant for the county, the Mayflower Municipal Health Group has more affordable insurance than the GIC or most other purchasing groups for health insurance. The Plymouth County Other Post-Employment Benefit Trust Fund has returns far greater than most any other retirement trust fund of its nature. So Plymouth County's already been providing many fantastic services to our member communities and even communities outside. I mean, any community can buy into PCOT. But to be able to take take the situation that we were all put in, and as I've often said, and I know you've probably heard me say it, to be able to deliver some semblance of hope or good news in what has been a 18-month and counting barrage of really bad news has been great. And as an elected official, you know, you're aware of some of the previous stuff I've done. School building committee work I did in Rockland and continue to do was equally rewarding. Like, to be able to do something like that for Rockland was great. And now to be able to do this for Plymouth County as a whole has been fantastic. And I know I'm personally extremely proud of it. And I'm sure I can be for Chairman Hanley, Commissioner Wright, Treasurer O'Brien, Frank Basler, our administrator who works his tail off, everybody that just works extremely hard at Plymouth County. It's the best bang for your buck. And we're just happy to be able to keep providing the same level of hard work and services that we provide for the member communities and the taxpayers.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. That's all the time that we have. I'm kind of disappointed because knowing that you are an avid sports fan of many Boston, New England teams, I'm disappointed we didn't get a chance to tap your answers on some of the ongoings for the local football team. But I suspect that you and I will have some time in the coming weeks to at least chat about that. He is Jared Valenzuela, Plymouth County Commissioner. And don't forget, tune in every Wednesday night at 6:15 p.m. He and the gang, Corey Miles, Rep to Coast, just to name a few folks who appear on the show or sit in on the show regularly. Again, thank you, Jared.
Thank you, Kevin. It is always a pleasure to be on Monday Night Talk.
We're going to step aside when we come back. More Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McWiggin's Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McWiggin's makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close, Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McWiggin's Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McWigginsPub.com.
In order to be successful in life, you must be proactive. Hi, I'm Mark Stiles of Stiles Law. Stiles Law has the knowledge and expertise to guide you through any residential or commercial real estate transaction. Whether you're a buyer, a seller, a real estate investor, or working with a real estate professional, and the topic of legal services comes up, let them know that you want to work with the team at Stiles Law.
The Stiles Law legal team offers consultations by phone, Zoom, or in person. Call 781-319-1900, 781-319-1900, on the web at stiles-law.com.
It's always better to be proactive so you're not forced to be reactive.
Buying, selling, or trading in a car? Learn from the experts how to make the process work for you. Tune into the Boss Auto Show every Saturday after the news at noon on 95.9 WATD. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back, and thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to 95.9 WATD and tuning into this Labor Day edition of Monday Night Talk. You could be anywhere, but you chose to be here. Our next guest so happens to be joining us, as he is a proud sponsor of this radio program. And he's here to talk a little bit about an event that is returning after a brief hiatus because of the pandemic. I'm talking about the McGuigan's Pub 5K that takes place in downtown Whitman. It's going to be coming up on September 26th at noon. And joining us to give you details of this fantastic event, and not to mention the festivities that will happen afterwards, we have Richard Rosen joining us. Richard, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me back, Kevin. It's always a pleasure to see you.
So talk to us about this year. You know, last year you were not able to put together this event, and this isn't just an ordinary road race. This is a road race that has been recognized, has been sought as being one of the better road races here on the South Shore. I think it's been quoted and actually listed in magazines. This is something that people mark their calendars for. Am I correct?
Yeah. At the beginning, we were picked to be in a series of six road races, one of the six. And we had a pretty good impression. And from that, it really took off. And this will be our 11th annual road race. Unfortunately, it would have been our 12th. But of course, last year, due to the pandemic, we couldn't have the road race. And normally the race is in May. And we weren't ready in May to have the road race of this year. So we put it off till the end of September. And we think that this is going to be a huge race, and there's a huge twist to it as well. So we've always done what they call the McGuigan's Pub 5K, and we've donated all of the proceeds to a huge amount of groups, organizations, youth sports, youths, with a large portion of it going to the Whitman Food Pantry. I am very proud to say that we have donated over $50,000 in the last 10 years. So it's been very successful. You know, at the beginning, it was like, you know, we just wanted to do the best road race and raise the most money to give it away as we possibly could. And we've given it from the Whitman Food Pantry to local food pantries to youth sports, to the One Boston Fund, a number of veterans organizations, a whole array of people we've given it to. But this year, we wanted to do a block party some weeks ago, and unfortunately that didn't work out with the women's Olympic soccer team. So we decided that we were going to make this road race not just a road race, but a road race, block party, and Irish Fest. I'm sure you remember that McGuigan's did an Irish Fest a number of years ago. So we've been working on it for a little bit, and I am very pleased to announce that we are going to do the McGuigan's Pub 5K that starts at noon on September 26th. And then when the race ends, and probably around 1 o'clock, the entertainment will begin. So I have been in contact with Maureen Haley. So Maureen Haley is famous for her Irish step dances, and they will be performing that afternoon outside on the street. As you know, I've been given permission to close. Well, we're going to close the road for the road race, but we're going to close Washington Street from Temple Street and South Ave up to School Street, the church. So that will be closed from just before noon to around 6 o'clock on that day. We also have Irish musicians, a duo, Cohane and Keneally. They're on board to perform that day. And then a Whitman local, Jen Kirby, will also be performing. So we're just hoping for good weather. We have a one-day liquor license to be serving alcohol outdoors. I believe that Harpoon is going to be involved. We'll have food outside, and both restaurants, of course, will be open. So it will be, we're looking forward to quite an afternoon in downtown Whitman. And of course, it's free to anybody that wants to attend to come listen to the music. We encourage people from everywhere to come just to watch the entertainment. It's going to be a great afternoon.
It's worth noting that this isn't just any willy-nilly road race, that this is actually a certified course, that there are awards will be given to male and female division winners. This is a serious, this is professionally run.
Yeah, I actually bring in people to run the road. I'm not to physically run it, but to operate the road race. We have professional timers. It's Chips and the Sneakers. There are a whole slew of divisions, right down to little kids we give ribbons to. Yeah, it is. It's a professional road race, and people use the time for various other races that they want to get into. So it has evolved from its beginning into a professional road race.
It's worth noting that if folks want to register, they can register prior to the race, but that if they end up registering the day of the race, that it could cost them a little bit more. Is that accurate?
Yeah, so they can go to either one of the websites, McGuigan's Pub or the Patio at McGuigan's, and the application is on the homepage, and they can actually sign up online. They can come into one of the restaurants and get a paper application and sign up. It's $30. The day of the race, it's $35.
Okay.
So it's also important to note that if you sign up ahead of time, you can get your bib, your chip, your T-shirt the day before. We have those available. We have a pickup at the pub on that Saturday before the race.
How important is putting on community events like this? Because you are, I feel, as an individual who loves his community, the town of Whitman, somebody who, you know, this isn't your first, the first event that you've helped put together. You and a group of residents were responsible for an event that was meant to be held once, but lasted 20 years. And of course, I'm talking about Winterfest. Where does the McGuigan's Pub 5K Road Race stack up amongst events like a Winterfest for you?
Well, you know, the Winterfest was started as, I started it as a one-day event that ran 20 years. During those 20 years, we also did the 125th anniversary events, 13 of them, for the town of Whitman back a number of years. We built the town playground. We raised a ton of money, but we've done an awful lot of community events. We did the tallest cookie drop was meant to be 1 year. We did it twice. I've done a number of community events over the year. You know, we still get beat up every year or every day, I don't know, on Facebook because we stopped doing Winterfest, but we couldn't get any, you know, 20 years, a long time. And, you know, when we were 40, it's a lot different than when we were 60. And the it's, you know, people are getting tired, people are getting, you know, we used to give up a week of our lives every summer to do the carnival to raise the funds for Winterfest. So we still get beat up for stopping it. But I tried like hell to get other people involved to do it. And I met with different groups of people and nobody ever put it together. To me, living in a small town my entire life, third generation, and having events like this is what makes a small town the best place in the world to possibly live. I think community events are huge. It defines what a town really is. And Whitman has been spectacular in over the years in what we've done. The road race, it's a little bit different than Winterfest, but the road race has become a huge event for the town. You know, I had someone telling me today how proud they are about Whitman and what has transformed in the center over the years, because this person works in the center and they used to go home at 5 or 6 o'clock on a Friday night and everybody would be trying to get out of Whitman Center. And now at 6 o'clock on a Friday night, the parking lots are full of people because people are now coming downtown to go to the restaurants or wherever. That's important for a small town. It's important for a small town to survive. You know, I've said it a million times, and you've heard me say it, that whether you like Whitman Center or you don't, it is something that most towns don't have, and it's a small functioning center. You know, we have banks and we have the post office and town hall. We have apartments and we have a drugstore and, on and on. We have the restaurants. We have things that draw people to the center. And that also is huge for the town of Whitman.
Now, once the post-race festivities, those get off the ground, where will everything be set up as far as for folks to enjoy the food and the music and the festivities? Will it be right in front of McGuigan's and the patio? Will it be right on Washington Street, or will it be off on the side street?
So it'll be both, but I believe most of the entertainment stuff will be taking place on Washington Street. You know, one thing I might want to add for a potential runner is that every runner who signs up gets a T-shirt, which is a really, really nice T-shirt.
Yep.
And at the end of the race, you're given a ticket. Every runner gets a free beer. So, I mean, you know, you might want to run just to have the beer. I don't know. So
now, will there be any USA on tap, or is that all gone?
It won't be on tap, but there'll be plenty of USA beer for people to try. And, you know, the cans itself, you know, we allow people to take the cans with them. We normally don't, but because there's such a souvenir. So we have a little stash of USA beer.
Now, I'm surprised that you don't have folks who say, hey, can I grab a couple of cans, and that they don't open those cans because maybe they're hoping to run into one of the Mewis sisters and get an autograph on the can if possible.
I believe that we have had that happen. And because you can sell liquor to go, it's legal.
You have to be thankful that we are at that point in the pandemic that we can enjoy a fantastic event like the McGuigan's Pub 5K road race and be able to have all those festivities that you have planned, the great music, the food. Is there anything as far as food-wise that you want to kind of talk about to lure other potential folks to come down to the center on the 26th?
Well, certainly both restaurants will be open. And we're hoping for good weather so we can open the windows in both restaurants, because now you know the windows in the pub now open. So both restaurants' full menus will be available, and then we'll also be doing hot dogs and hamburgers outside. So if you don't want to come into the restaurant, or they're too busy, you can still eat outdoors with the hot dogs and hamburgers.
I have to say, it's interesting you mentioned hot dogs, because I remember one of the final Winterfest festivities that took place right out in front of McGuigan's Pub. This is prior to the patio being built, because there was a parking lot at that time, I'm pretty sure, was that you had the hot dog eating contest right in front of McGuigan's. So it's interesting you talk about having dogs and burgers. And then the first memory I get, anybody who attended any of those Winterfest festivities, was the hot dog eating contest.
It was certainly the most disgusting thing that we ever did during Winterfest for 20 years. We didn't start that at the beginning. That probably started about 12 years in, and we started doing a hot dog eating contest, and it was just, I don't know how that kid eats 70 of them in, you know, 20 seconds. It's just crazy. It was really fun, though. That was one of the fun things that we did.
I will have to say, though, and not to take this off the side of the focus of our conversation here, that is, we are talking about the upcoming McGuigan's Pub 5K road race taking place at 12 noon on September 26th. But that is before that, I think they used to have a pie eating contest. That you talk about a hot dog eating contest. I believe that it one year got so out of hand that you guys decided not to do the pies anymore and deferred to other things.
Yeah, we used to do the pie eating contest in front of the town hall. And there was a couple people that got a little carried away.
Yep.
And unfortunately, you know, people ruin things, and yeah, we couldn't do the pie eating contest anymore. So we gave that one up and went on to the hot dog eating contest.
So as we have a couple of more minutes left here in our conversation, anything we haven't touched upon in regards to the annual road race, a call to arms, you know, summer is winding down and, you know, before the fall begins, this would be a great time to come on down to McGuigan's Pub. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. You know, it's really important to recognize the sponsors of my road race that have been, you know, we started raising funds last year prior to the pandemic. So I had a number of people that made contributions and we didn't do the road race. I contacted them all and said, listen, we're going to do the road race next year if we can. You don't need to give me any more money. I'll make sure that your name is on the, you know, we take care of it. And it was amazing how many people that donated us money last year came back and gave us money this year. It, you know, like Mutual Bank and, you know, AL Prime Energy. So it's and there's a whole bunch of them. I don't have the list in front of me, but it's important. The beauty of the event this year, Kevin, is that people have been cooped up for a long time and it's outdoors. It's an outdoor event where people should feel rather comfortable about being outside. Even, you know, as we start to regress a little bit with this whole pandemic thing, it's outdoors. So people should not need to worry, you know, whether the person next to them has been vaccinated or not. And it's also important that, you know, a lot of the funds that we raise, we give to people that desperately need it. And you haven't been able to have a fundraiser in the last 15, 16 months. So to be able to do all these things in one day, to me, is it's really important.
And again, remind folks, where have you decided to put those funds this year? As you have said, that all of the money that is raised does go to a worthy cause.
So half of it will probably go, will go to the Whitman Food Pantry in memory of Ann Trotta. Long story, but we have never donated funds in memory of someone. But Ann, who is a tireless worker in the town of Whitman, passed recently. We just thought it would be, Danielle actually thought it would be a great idea, my daughter, to donate the money in her memory, which, again, we've never done before. And then we will split the money up to the South Shore Veterans Groups, the soccer teams, you know, all the local people, and not just Whitman. I mean, we spread the money around to different towns. You know, we get requests and we go over them, and generally we give people donations. Some of them, you know, are $100 or $200, but it's $100 or $200 that they need. And some of them are $500, and some of them, you know, like the food pantry, could be a few thousand dollars.
Richard, we want to thank you again for talking to us about or sharing details about the upcoming McGuigan's 5K, McGuigan's Pub 5K, taking place on September 26th. It's a Sunday, 12 noon. First 300 participants who sign up, I believe, get a fantastic race jersey. And this is a course that you definitely want to miss out on. And you don't want to miss out on the great festivities that are going to follow afterwards. So we thank you for sharing details about this fantastic community event.
Kevin, thank you very much. And I just want to close by inviting everybody to downtown Whitman on Sunday, September 26th.
And that'll do it for the first half of Monday Night Talk, the first hour, of course. We will step aside just for a brief moment, but when we come back, hour number two and kicking it off, joining me will be the WBTD's managing news editor, Christine James, and we're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming 9/11 ceremonies, and we're also going to kind of take a look back 20 years ago at the events that took place on September 11th, 2001. You don't want to miss this. Just in a few moments, you are tuned into Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than two or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner. who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced Cancer Care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Hey, the Lions are at it again. The Plymouth Lions Club is holding their Thirsty Pilgrim Beer Festival in September. We just can't wait till October. Saturday, September 11th from 12 to 7, and Sunday, September 12th from 12 to 6. Games, professional beer stein racing, food, and fun for all. We have attracted over 20,000 people to the Hedge House on the Plymouth waterfront, and we're going to do it again. It's all out in the open. And premiering, for the first time in Plymouth, the famous Tubofrau Harbrau Band, Oompa Band. That's Saturday, September 11th, 12 to 7, Sunday, September 12th, 12 to 6. Last year, the Lions raised over $50,000 for local food shelters. If you'd like to help us with a sponsorship, learn more at theplymouthlions.org. Oompa Band, and thank you.
Buying, selling, or trading in a car? Learn from the experts how to make the process work for you. Tune into the Boss Auto Show every Saturday after the news at noon on 95.9 WATD. Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Okay, it's time for hour number two of your Labor Day Monday Night Talk. We have a fantastic segment ahead for you. Joining me is the managing news editor, the award-winning Christine James. Joins us. You know, later this week, our country will observe the 9/11 attacks. And who would you want to talk to? None other than the managing news editor, a journalist, and somebody who has not only witnessed and experienced this from a different point of view, we'll talk about that, but also how things have evolved over the years. Christine, thank you for being a guest on the segment.
Oh, good evening, Kevin. It's great to be here.
So, you know, as I teased, later this week, we will be observing the 20th anniversary of our nation coming under attack. As a journalist, as the head of a very active newsroom, what does this observance mean to you?
It means a lot of things, because we have specifically since 9/11 covered this issue numerous times. We've never stopped covering it since 9/11. And we have had a number of regular guests on the air. You know, we have our terrorism expert, Colonel Dave Gavigan. We've spoken with other people through the years, people that were in New York that day, people that lost a relative, people that have still worked to create charities in memory of that and do good things with that. So a lot of different aspects with that. And as we were talking a little bit off air, and I think people that are regular listeners to the station know, my experience was a little bit different that day. My husband and I left Boston on September 10th that night, flying out of the airport to Dublin, Ireland. Now, it was interesting that night that I mentioned, because my husband and I used to travel quite a bit. When we're going through customs, they usually pull out two things specifically. One, my little travel alarm clock that I like, because I trust that. And my husband always has a knife, like a Swiss Army knife. They always pull those out of line. They didn't touch anything. Everyone, and this is not meant to be offensive, everybody who checked our things had a foreign accent that night for a number of reasons. A lot of things, because I was just noticing other people, a lot of things were not getting pulled out of line. And I'm still convinced that there were other people on ground crews and in the area that knew something was up. Maybe not what day, but I'm convinced that other people knew that something was on the way for 9/11.
Is that the investigative reporter in you, that you just notice an odd occurrence could be happening?
Yes,
and you go,
because
it
was
not.
It wasn't typical. Like I said, my husband and I had traveled quite a bit. It was not typical. So we flew to Dublin, Ireland, and it was not our first trip there. Country I love. I'm glad to find out recently through Ancestry that I am part Irish, and woke up in time to see the second plane flying into the World Trade Center. Kevin, the feeling of being overseas and seeing that, I felt, is this the start of World War III? Because it reminded me of so many of those old movies that you watch and you think, these people that got stuck in Europe during World War II, and you think, my God, how did that happen? I guess that's how this happens. Now, you've got to remember, all the planes were stopped, like midair, they had to turn around and come back to their respective airports because they stopped air traffic. Hotels were jammed. They were setting up cots in ballrooms because there were no rooms left. Thank God we were staying with some relatives of my husband's. We couldn't get phone calls through for 2 days because the phone lines were jammed. The internet, there were problems with. I did finally get on the web and look at the WATD website and was actually able to see some stuff. And I was very worried because two of the people that actually worked in the station also were part-time flight attendants and both flew that Boston to LA route. So that was, and I was worried that they may have been on those flights. Thank goodness neither one of them were working that day, but one of them later, who never went back to being a flight attendant, had traveled that route and had actually been interviewed afterwards by the FBI because some of the hijackers did make practice runs. And one of the people who worked in the newsroom that was a part-time flight attendant recognized some of the hijackers. She never went back to flying again because she just didn't feel comfortable. People were stopping us on the streets in Dublin. Are you an American? Are you an American? Offering support. The Garda there, the police who you never see with weapons, all had big semi-automatic weapons. The lines around the U.S. Embassy were jammed for people wanting to give their condolences. I think it was Mary McAleese at the time, as the prime minister, came out, first country in Europe to say, we stand with the United States. There are more, people of Irish descent in the States than there are in the country of Ireland. It was very emotional. In fact, when we left Ireland, the driver to the airport was a former Army Ranger who would not take our money. Would not take our money and drove us to the airport. I'm getting a little choked up talking about that. Going through customs, coming back, very, very different. What usually took an hour took 3 hours, and they scrambled us on the plane. You were not allowed to sit with who you wanted to sit with. I guess they were worried that there might be a second wave of things, so that was pretty scary. Now, over there, I remember feeling so disconnected, and this is one of those random moments. I turned on Sky News, and they would have reports constantly. One of the reports that I turned on, lo and behold, there's the former Duxbury police chief, Mark DeLuca, being interviewed at Ground Zero from Sky News. I thought, what's the connection with that? It was just so interesting. I also did some reporting from Ireland to the WATD newsroom because I found out that Osama bin Laden's top money men were traveling on Irish passports. They were not native Irish. They had gotten passports later. So that was a part of the story, too. And it was, I can't begin to tell you what an overwhelming experience it was.
So what was it like flying back to the country? Was it just as chaotic flying back? And where, my understanding is that you were one of the first ones to the state.
We were one of the first flights back to the States. Again, they scrambled us. So everybody was sitting with strangers, which was probably smart. Flew back to the States, landed. You know how there's usually chatter? The whole flight?
Quiet.
Quiet. The landing? Quiet. And we look out, and there on the tarmac are those special ops state police guys with the really big guns. We get off. They're watching everything. Customs is watching us. A guy who sat in front of me, he was not Middle Eastern. He was from Colombia because I heard him talking. They pulled him out of line. They went through everything in his suitcase. And they also went through, like if you put a scrap of paper in your wallet with somebody's phone number or whatever, they pulled all those little scraps of paper out of his wallet. They sliced open the lining with the knife. They didn't even open my luggage, Kevin. I'd like to think that I look a little scarier than Mary Poppins, but maybe I guess I don't. So, again, everybody completely quiet. Get out to long-term parking. We get to our car. It was obvious. They'd gone through all the cars in Lot B. I guess it made sense. They wanted to see if there were bombs or anything else. And this is unusual because the guy at the gate, I said, did any? He goes, yeah, they went through all the cars. And he goes, just get out of here. Wouldn't take our money. So again, everything so quiet and silent. And it's just that feeling, what's happening in our country. This is so scary and it's so sad. And the thing that was unknown to us at that time, my husband's from New York. A number of his relatives work on Wall Street. And a couple of them made it out of that building, literally. They were telling me about like running over the 59th Street Bridge. And unfortunately, the husband of a cousin, a guy who worked at Cantor Fitzgerald, was on the 107th floor, didn't make it out. And they were evacuated to the roof, and he didn't get time to say goodbye to his wife. And it was a guy I'd known since he was a college kid. It was terrible.
Interesting.
Left a young widow with three little kids.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Christine James, managing news editor here at WATD, and recalling her experience. You don't know these things when you're planning a vacation, you're taking time off, and having such things happen, a historical event take place, and being, you know, immersed in it. When you returned back to work, to the newsroom, did it feel different compared to past times?
Yes.
Do you take a time off?
Yes, it did, because usually you come back, everybody's smiling, laughing, oh, how was your trip? Oh, here's what happened. And sometimes you're like, oh, nothing happened. This time, everything had changed, because I know that just from what I heard, they had to, I hate to use the word pivot because that's such a pandemic term, but they really went after stuff. They had people on the ground that they knew in New York City calling in reports. The newsroom here was cranking. You know, they talked to people in Boston, people who were involved with the flights or had relatives on those flights. And it was a very scary time, again, still trying to put together pieces, because remember, there was always that threat of, is there another wave of terror coming? And did everybody seem to know somebody who lost someone? It was very sad.
It's interesting you say that, because you recalling what you went through, I liken it to anything that has happened in history, something, a significant event, whether it was Princess Diane when she died. Whether,
I remember that.
Whether it was, I wasn't old enough, but there are those folks. I remember, you know, my parents recalling what it was like when they heard that President Kennedy had been shot.
I was in grade school. Okay, now I'm giving away secrets here, because I was in second grade. I was on the playground, and my brother, who was in the sixth grade, came out and told me that, and I was, what? And he told me that, and it was interesting now, thinking about it, second graders. One of my best friends in grade school, her father was from Texas. I mean, it's not funny, but when a second grader turns to you and said, I bet you it was Johnson, I never forget that. I, as a second grader, I really didn't know who the vice president was, but I guess being the daughter of a Texan, maybe she'd heard that. And I remember too specifically, Kevin, because when I went home that day, my mother, who was emotional but not a crier, I only saw her crying when my grandmother died. My mother was crying when I went home from school about JFK. And that, I still remember how much that upset me, to see her so upset about President Kennedy being shot.
It's so interesting. And when I think back to what it was like, just that, not only the events that occurred that day, where nobody knew how many planes, and like you said, I think you said it so eloquently, it's like, is this the start of World War III? Because there was the report of one plane flying into the World Trade Center, another plane, and then there was thoughts that there were other planes that were heading to other destinations that could not be accounted for. One heading towards
very scary.
Very scary. And it was like, it felt like we were at war. And that's how I remember it myself. I would ask you, and my personal thought is that it seemed like we came together as a country. There was this sense of unity.
Yes.
But it was kind of somber. In your recollection, do you feel that was something that lasted for a while, or that it kind of faded?
It was very noticeable. Again, with everybody being so quiet, being reflective, simple things like letting people go at traffic stop signs. It was go right ahead. It wasn't the, I would say, wasn't the usual vibrant dynamic of Boston traffic. I'm just going to repeat what the author Dennis Lehane said when somebody asked him, when he lives in California, what are you so angry about? He goes, I'm not angry. I'm from Boston. And I think that kind of says a lot. But yeah, you would see that, like, go ahead. People very, very somber. I think it's almost like we felt collective as a family, sort of like in your own family, if there's a death in your family, and how sometimes the other stuff, which is usual daily nonsense, gets put to the side because it is nonsense, and you think, that's all right, just go ahead, and you put things into perspective. And I think this country put a lot of things into perspective. And I think over time, I don't think you can keep that up for so long, because I think it's almost impossible, because daily life again gets in the way. Did I see that fade? Eventually. But some parts of that remained. And I think it's I think there were some things that happened where people saw where some of the mistakes were some of the gaps in coverage, some of the gaps in what happens in this country, and the very scary feeling that knowing that maybe we're not as safe in this country as we thought we were.
So you may have answered my next question, and that is that the overtone for the annual observances has changed. When you listen to some of the reports that the reporters go out and get, does it sound as though that there's still that remembrance, or it's just, do you feel that?
I think there's a lot of that, because it's a pivotal moment in history for our country. We got to remember, too, every year that this happens, there are people that were either tiny children then or not even born. Right. It's hard to imagine. You think, my gosh, was that 20 years ago? So because of that, because the population starts to change, it's inevitable that maybe things aren't remembered as strongly as they could be. But I do think that this is a pivotal event in history, I think, as important as the American Revolution. So I think people will remember it.
I think life, there's always something that's called timing. Mm-hmm. And just a couple of weeks ago, we saw the United States kind of abruptly leave Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that's going to play a role in the events that take place later on this week?
In what way do you mean?
I'm just, do you feel as though that there might be a remembrance of the 13 soldiers who died?
I hope so. And I go, you know, working in the newsroom, although this isn't a news capacity, I usually can't give my opinion, but the way that whole thing was handled was disgraceful.
I think about all that has gone into terrorism, and knowing that the reason we went into, and I'm just like, mm-hmm. I try to withhold. I want to be the person who's trying to draw out the information mm-hmm. from an individual. At least that's what I've been taught. Is that we went into Afghanistan because that was kind of a hotbed of activity for terrorism. Mm-hmm. So when I ask that question, the thought is that are we. You know, is there kind of a cyclical thing that's happening here where now we have pulled out, we don't have any sources monitoring what's going on? Could history be repeating itself?
Well, I think history could be repeating itself, because it does repeat itself. And when you get into, again, I'm no expert on terrorism or the Middle East, but how many thousands of years have those battles been going on between tribal factions where the lines of the countries were arbitrarily drawn by Europeans? That's been going on for thousands of years. What has happened? Communication systems have gotten better, and the introduction of automatic weapons. That's what's changed. Nothing else.
What about the positive things that may have just kind of come out of this? You know, while there were individuals who were lost, I know just recently we had an individual in here who was, he was supposed to go and be on a flight. He was a flight attendant. He's pushing a cart to ground zero.
Paulie Venito, yeah.
Yeah, Venito, Paulie. I see that as a kind of a positive thing. Is somebody making the most out of a horrific
event? I do. I love that when people can think outside of themselves. And that is very positive. And you see things like what Christy Coombs has done with her foundation to help not only people who were survivors of people that were on the plane with her husband, one of the planes that flew into the World Trade Center, but all these other people that might need help too. And something that's maybe not tied directly to this, but something that I see as a very positive thing about this generation. I know people talk about, hey, how about those millennials? This generation, more so than any generation, seems to be the most accepting of other people and other cultures, nationalities, religions, than any generation I remember. And maybe it's because they've been exposed to other cultures, other people, seen things on TV and in person. So seeing that and seeing an openness and a willingness to get to know other people and cultures, that makes me feel good. It gives me a little glimmer of hope, Kevin.
You know, the other element, the other ingredient I haven't added into this is this pandemic that we're enduring. What kind of a role does that play in the observances later this week?
I think it's exhausting with a lot of people because doesn't seem like there's any definite end to what's happened. And we all know people who've been sick or have been affected by this. I'm not going to say one of the positive things, but one of the things I think, again, the thing it may have brought out was, we're thinking about it, maybe times when many people, I'm not going to say us because we didn't get to quarantine in the newsroom, but think about all the people, and I've spoken with many, just felt like they were so tired of being by themselves or stuck in an apartment or, you know, at home with kids. And maybe they got to have more of an understanding of maybe some of our other citizens, especially maybe elderly that have no local kids, who are like that constantly and don't have that interaction with people, and maybe get them a little bit more compassionate, thinking about maybe I should reach out to that neighbor or I should reach out to that friend and include them with what we're doing, because it's no fun to be alone all the time. And I think people may have more of an awareness of that.
It's kind of interesting, but would you say that the pandemic that started early 2020 and has kind of lingered, we'll call it lingering because it's still kind of hanging around, it won't go away. Would you say it's somewhat similar to, or maybe a little bit greater of an event than the 9/11 observances, but it has a similar feel of, an outpouring of people wanting to work together, but now it's turned political?
It's hard to find something now that doesn't turn political. And I think a lot of that has to do, first of all, with human nature. I mean, if you look back in history before the internet, et cetera, things were riled up in the papers. Look at the so-called Spanish flu, who got blamed for that, where it really originated. But again, it's human nature. They want to categorize something. And if there's a problem, they want to either figure it out or blame someone. I'm not saying everybody, but to make it finite, to make it into an equation. So what are we going to think about this in 20 years? Who knows? Maybe we'll have another pandemic to go through. I hope not. But I do see a lot of things getting made more and more political and getting so emotional. And that really bothers me because I see a lot of people that cannot discuss an issue without getting personal and political. They can't discuss the issue. It turns into two sentences of an issue and then a personal attack. And I don't like that. It's the same thing you see on Facebook and when you see some of these comments on some of the newspaper articles where somebody says, oh, yeah, I think about this, I think about that. Well, you are blah, blah, and then they're at it. Just crazy stuff. It's like, you know what? How does that solve a problem? How does that advance an issue? What does that do besides make somebody feel good because they're a wise guy?
I will say this. The one thing, while social media, and I've done segments on this, and you've done news reports on this. My thought on social media is that it's for those people who can't walk up to someone and tell them how they feel, but it's easier to hit send. You can say anything you want. It can be as derogatory as you want. There's no consequences. If you walked up to somebody and said something that's not nice, a couple of different things could happen. It could maybe start an argument. It could get physical. You don't have to worry about that on Facebook unless, that person happens to see you next day and then, then.
And you know what I say to those people? Be brave. Be human. Talk to people. It's so easy to be a coward.
I will quote what a retired police chief once said, and that is it's easy to sit in your underwear in your basement and type something out. It's a lot harder.
I have that quote on my computer because I know who said that. And if you're listening, that's great.
It was good stuff. We have a couple of minutes left here, Christine. We're here with Christine James, managing news editor for the WATD newsroom. Anything that you want to say in closing to put in perspective, 9/11, remembering the incident that took place or the series of incidents that took place 20 years ago in 2001.
You know what? It's just remember those who died. I feel horrible for what happened. Remember the first responders. I get choked up when I see those videos. You know, you hear people say, you know, those guys run to trouble. We run out of trouble. And it's when you see the videos, even some of the stuff that never made it to the mainstream TV, because some of it's difficult to watch with people jumping off the roofs. And there were a lot more of that, I think, than people were aware of. And you see all these first responders who acted so heroically. And I don't know how else to describe it, because I don't think that describes it enough. I'm so amazed by that, and I'm inspired by it.
Just a quick note to folks who are tuned in. I'm sure that there are going to be many events that are going to be covered. There are going to be many remembrances that are going to be covered by WATD. I know you mentioned Christy Coombs. I do believe that they are going to be doing something this Friday at 9:15 in front of the police station, the Abington Police Station, a candlelight vigil. Not sure as to what the different events are, but if folks want to find out more about what's happening, How what would you suggest they do to find out if they want to?
We'll end up putting some of those on our website. I know Marshfield's doing something, Plimpton, Plymouth, a lot of the towns are. And you know what? Remember the good that's in people when you get a chance. And just, you know, maybe even if you feels like you're embarrassed to say it, or maybe they're embarrassed to hear it, tell a first responder how much you appreciate them. Tell somebody who lost a family member that you're thinking of that person. Kind word goes a long way.
It does go a long way. And it's interesting what we dealt with last year with George Floyd and all the nuances to that in regards to, you know, being a police officer. It's interesting to see how things are happening with our country. Well, Christine, thank you so much for joining me and being a guest on this segment.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. It was a pleasure anytime.
We're going to step aside, and when we come back, the final segment of Monday Night Talk, your Labor Day Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Please stay tuned.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McGuigan's makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close, Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McGuigan's Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McGuigan'sPub.com.
At Shell, we know from the time you get up to the time you wrap up,
good night,
there's a lot of meetups, eat-ups, and hurry-ups. So come to Shell and get three things done at once. Fill up with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus to help keep your engine running like new. Save up with the Fuel Rewards program and never pay full price for gas again. And snack up with in-store rewards to save even more at the pump. Make the most of the stop you need to make with Shell. In engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus premium gasoline. See full terms and conditions at fuelrewards.com.
Country Legends, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Country star Jason Aldean has done it all. Or has he? For him, the quest for success is never ending.
I think if you start to feel like you've accomplished everything you can accomplish, you start to get lazy. You know, when you start to get lazy, there's somebody there that's waiting to take your spot.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hi, this is Peter Evers, the host of the Bamsey Buzz, which is going to be airing on Sundays at 11. Please join me to talk about all things Bamsey, all things going on in our community and all the programs that we have. And we'll also be talking about the vaccine and the COVID-19 pandemic. And you can hear that Sundays at 11 on WATD.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Hey, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, we have arrived at the final segment of your Labor Day Monday Night Talk broadcast. My name is Kevin Tachi, and it's been great to be here and guide you through the holiday, at least the final day of the holiday, long holiday weekend. And what a better way to do it than to talk with a good friend of mine. We have talked football for many years. I love calling him the Potentate of Pigskin. Of course, the founder of ColdHotFootballFacts.com, but he loves the Pigskin. He loves football, whether it's national football or local football here in the Boston area. He's all about it. Kerry J. Byrne is my guest. Kerry, you know, we're...
Kevin Tachi, the hottest working man in radio. It's always a pleasure to be on with you. Something I look forward to. We don't do it enough, a couple times a year, talking football. Sometimes we dabble on some other topics, but it's always a pleasure, and thank you for having me on.
You got it. Well, knowing that we're just a couple of short days from the opening of the NFL season, Tampa Bay taking on the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
How can I go in? How can I even look at myself in the mirror without having a discussion about the NFL season with someone who is an expert?
Well, Kevin, I'll tell you what, I don't cover the NFL day to day like I used to.
No.
I do it more remotely, but I'm still a fan, obviously. And
yes.
I actually, when Tom Brady left Boston to go to Tampa last year, I bought season tickets to Tampa Bay with my buddy Alex Casares. I think you know Alex from Braintree Brewhouse, big, well-known guy in the area, runs a great business into bar pizza, as you and I are both into, which he
sells
great bar pizza at Braintree Brewhouse. But, and of course, last year, we couldn't go to the games. So I'm going, I live in New York City now, as you know. I am actually, believe it or not, taking the train from Penn Station to Tampa next week. Just a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I have the time to do it. I'm flying back. I'm not doing it again. But I'm going to be down in Tampa for the opening to watch Brady raise banner number 7, which I know is a hot topic in this area. I am pro-Brady. I have friends who Brady died to them. Hardcore Patriot, friends who are hardcore Patriots fans. I'm a follow the Patriots my whole life, like you have. But I'm a Brady guy. I want him to win. I was excited when he won. I followed Tampa last year, and I'm going to follow them again this year. I know that's not everyone's cup of tea, but I do know that Tampa, the stadium in Tampa, Raymond James, is going to be packed with Bostonians who bought season tickets last year and now this year, like I did.
It's funny you say that. It's because the gentleman who is on to start our radio program this evening, Jared Valenzuela, was talking to me about he's a big Tom Brady fan, and that he also, so this is kind of a weird coincidence. You know, I've got two guests talking about, you know, professing that they, you know, not only do they like probably one of the greatest football players ever until another individual comes along and tops what Tom Brady's been able to accomplish, that, you know, that they've, you know, follow him and got season tickets. And it's amazing. And it's great that he has such a following.
Well, where are you, Kevin? I want to know. Your guests talk, which I appreciate. Are you pro Brady since he left New England or not pro Brady? There's no right answer. It's your answer, but are you?
I'm on the fence. I'm on the fence. I kind of wish he stayed, but seeing how he departed his final game, you know, where his last game will forever, as a New England Patriot, will all forever be known as a pick six. That's how he closed out his Patriots career. But this guy showed that it doesn't take much to motivate him. He found a place to where he is able to repeat the success he had while as a New England Patriot. And yeah, I'm following the guy. I rooted for him because the Patriots were out of it.
Yep.
Last year. But if Mac Jones and the New England Patriots can even come close, at least make it to the playoffs, you're asking something that's impossible. I think it's something that has never happened. You've never had a rookie quarterback that I know of that has actually gone to the Super Bowl.
No, we've had some guys go close. I mean, one of the closest, and this guy's a Hall of Famer, and he probably doesn't get enough credit, But Ben Roethlisberger, his rookie season, that Pittsburgh team, 2004, went 15-1.
Yeah.
They were a juggernaut. They're the team that ended New England's record 21-game win streak that year, if you remember correctly. The win streak began in week three of the 2003 season. The Patriots won, what, 14 straight regular season, couple, you know, what, three playoff games, four more. I think I have the numbers right, four more games in 2004, and then got lost badly to rookie Ben Roethlisberger on the Steelers in 04. That Steelers team was dominant. Tom Brady and the Patriots went into Pittsburgh that year, one of Tom Brady's greatest early games, and put a smackdown on the 15-1 Steelers and ended up winning the Super Bowl. But Roethlisberger came awful close, if not for that Patriots team. Nobody's done it. So if the Patriots are to do it with Mac Jones, it will be historic. But, you know, I think they, first of all, let's step back. They made the right decision. Cam Newton, you know, good guy, bad. I don't know. He seemed like a nice guy. I don't get into his personal lives, but he did what he had to do. But, you know, he was not the guy. His numbers, his efficiency numbers that you and I talk about, that win and lose NFL games, they weren't there. He was not an elite quarterback. He put up numbers that quarterbacks of bad teams put up, and that wasn't going to change. It didn't seem like it was going to change. And Mac Jones may not fail and may not succeed in the NFL, but he's got all the upside in the world. Whereas, you know, Cam Newton did not. So the Patriots clearly made the right decision, and the guy's numbers in college were sick, which is not necessarily a barometer of NFL success, but he has all the potential in the world to be a great NFL quarterback, at least good enough to make the Patriots a contender.
If we look at heading into the season, is it utterly the same two powerhouses right now? Is it the Kansas City Chiefs that will still be dominant in the AFC, and will Tampa Bay retain what they were able to accomplish last year? Or are there teams on the cusp of being in the conversation come playoff time?
Yeah, I mean, there's always, you know, there's usually a surprise team or two. But at the end of the day, the NFL is very simple. And I know you and I have talked about this a lot. Do you have a great quarterback or don't you? And people think I'm oversimplifying the NFL when I say that. But the reality, Kevin, is that if your quarterback puts up elite passing stats, elite efficiency numbers, not volume numbers, doesn't need the most yards, the best fantasy stats, doesn't need the most touchdown passes, but if he puts up a very efficient, highly efficient numbers, that's the key stat that translates to wins and losses in the NFL. So, you know, Patrick Mahomes has proved he can put up those efficiency numbers. Tom Brady has proven it now for 20 years. Who's going to be the surprise team? I don't know who those other guys are right now that are going to be able to make the break. Russell Wilson has always put up those numbers. Since his Super Bowl year, seems to have Seattle has kind of seemed to have fallen off at a certain level, certainly in the big games. But you know, they were a very good team last year. That's a team I would still keep an eye on. In the AFC, I mean, you know, we'll see. See what Baltimore does. You know, don't forget Lamar Jackson has been one of the most exciting players in football. And if he can put up those elite efficiency numbers, if he can play really, you know, it doesn't matter how these guys run the ball, believe it or not, as exciting as they may be. It's all about how efficiently you pass the football. And if he can put up those great efficiency numbers again, that made him MVP, right? He was MVP in 2019, if I remember correctly, right? You know, if he can kind of return to those numbers, and he did step back a bit last year, granted from a very high level, then, you know, Baltimore was certainly a team to contend with. So we'll see, but I would certainly keep Kansas City in that contender role as long as Patrick Mahomes is on the field. And I would keep Tampa Bay in that, on top of the NFC until Tom Brady hits the wall and time, you know, history and anatomy and physiology and science and biology tell us that he's going to hit that wall. It's a miracle he hasn't yet. Maybe this is a year. I don't want to be the guy who predicted it. Like, I'm just forgetting the name of the guy from ESPN who everyone in New England hates, who predicted Tom Brady would fall off the cliff, what, 8 years ago?
Yeah.
What's his name? I'm forgetting his name.
I know who you're talking. I'll reach out.
I know him. Anyway, we all know him, but it's just it's kind of having a brain cramp right now. But you know, Tom Brady's won what, four Super Bowls since this guy said he was falling off a cliff. So I'm not predicting Tom Brady's going to fall off a cliff, but it is inevitable, right? Nobody's going to beat, you know, Father Time is undefeated, as they say. So maybe this is the year Tom Brady falls off the cliff, but I think he's earned the right not to be predicted out of the game, right? Well, he's gonna die on his shield and be carried off the field, I think.
And the name you're looking for is Max Kellerman.
Max Kellerman. We all know his name. I don't know why. Absolutely. I was having a brain cramp there, Kevin.
Yep. But what's interesting is I want to get your take again as a guy who loves football and has prided himself on, you know, on at least, you know, following, you know, the sport itself. What's your thoughts as to the change? 17 game season, the playoffs are going to change. You're not going to have two teams that get a bye. You're going to get one team in each conference that will get a bye, and then you're going to have six wild card games over a weekend. Holy cow!
Yeah, well, you know, the NFL likes more games, and I do not personally listen. Nobody wants more football. You know, nobody loves football more than I do. One of the keys to the NFL's success and football in general is that it's rarity, right? It's not played often. You know, look at college football. It's five or six games a year at home where people just ramp it up and are ready to rock and roll in their lifetime events. And, you know, in the pros, it's only eight games, and this year it'll be eight or nine, right? So the NFL, I think, does run the risk at some point of oversaturating itself. We haven't seen that yet. People are going to watch it. I do think 17 games personally is too much. I think it beats up the players. The compromise, of course, was take away one preseason game and go to 17 regular season games. So it used to be, for your listeners who aren't, you know, big football fans, there were four preseason games and 16 regular season games in the playoffs. So 20 competitive games before the playoffs, or semi-competitive games. Fans didn't like it because NFL teams were charging you full price, right? You paid full price to go to Gillette and not see any of the starters in a preseason game, which was, you know, the NFL taking advantage of the fans. So they've alleviated some of that by eliminating one preseason game. But I still think you could sit your key players in the preseason, then have to play. There wasn't much risk of injury for your starters. I do think this is going to beat up players. It is one game is a significant amount of new games in the NFL. I don't like it. I don't like it myself. I don't like the odd number of games. I think 16 might have even been too much. They played 12 for years in the NFL. Then they played 14 games up until 1977. They went to 16 only in 78 in our lifetime. So I don't like it personally, other than just maybe it's an old football fan, oh, back when I was a kid type of thing. But I just don't like it. And now the Patriots' last regular season game, Kevin, is January 9th. That used to be the Super Bowl.
Crazy.
You know, I mean, the season, one thing I don't like about football, basketball, about basketball, hockey, and baseball, the seasons are too long.
Yeah.
I mean, baseball, they start spring training in the middle of winter. They play 162 games. The World Series ends almost in November. I mean, there's only two or three down months. And football, I don't know. I just think they're extending the season too long. I don't like it, but, you know, we'll see how the fans turn out, and I'm sure – at the end of the day, it'll be a ratings winner and a money maker, you know, for the NFL, which is, at the end of the day, what's going to drive these decisions.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. Is that it's about money. And then how can we maximize our profits, and how can we, you know, benefit from, you know, expanding coverage of what they're able to provide?
Yeah, and look at it from this. They go to, you know, now instead of going to the networks and saying, hey, pay us for 16, you know, games a season – now they're saying pay us for 17. Well, that might not seem a lot, but it's actually 6 or 7% more added to your schedule. So now they can go to the network, and who is paying us, you know, for the sake of argument, the network, you know, ABC or whoever, you know, was paying the NFL $1 billion a year for broadcast rights.
Yep.
Well, now there's 6% more on the schedule, 6% more on the plate.
Yep.
You know, 6% of a billion is what, $60 million, you know? It's not an insignificant amount of money that they can ask for by adding that one game. So, and that's going to drive these decisions. But at some point, you reach the saturation point for the fan, but more importantly, more likely immediately, you run the risk of hurting marquee players. One more game a year, you know, that Tom Brady would have had a whole nother, you know, season plus under his belt. You know, he's played what, 20 seasons, but he's played three seasons in the postseason, right? And then, you know, on top of that, he would have already added another whole season if he had played his whole career in a 17-game schedule. It beats up the body. The NFL beats up the body. It's a war of attrition. And this, if we're just doing the math again, it's a 6% more likely chance someone gets injured for the season. 6% more chance you lose a marquee player. 6% chance that Patrick Mahomes goes down with an injury.
Right.
A career-threatening injury. You know, these things all add up. And I just, again, instinctively, gut reaction as a fan, I don't like it.
Interesting enough that come a month into the season is a game that all eyes are going to be on, especially in the New England area, and that is when Tom Brady returns to Gillette Stadium to take on his old coach, Bill Belichick.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that game, Kerry?
Yeah, that's October 3rd. Is that Monday night or Sunday night? I can't remember. Well, listen, it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a lot of chatter. It's going to be a lot of talk. It's Sunday night, actually. That's a Sunday night, not a Monday night. A lot of chatter, a lot of fun. Listen, the great thing about football is the buildup, right? We spend a week, 2 weeks in the case of the Super Bowl, overanalyzing every little aspect. There's going to be a lot of reliving Tom Brady's greatness, what he's did for New England, what he's done for New England sports. You know, this is, excuse me, Kevin. This has been, let's not minimize it. This is not a Boston sports fan talking. This is a national sports observer, someone who, you know, I, at the end of the day, in my reporting, I don't have a Boston allegiance. I have an allegiance to the stats, the data, the truth, all the stuff right. We pioneered at Cold Hard Football Facts. The reality is we are looking, he was the linchpin in the greatest dynasty in the history of sports,
sure. Not
just football. No team ever won so relentlessly over a 20-year period. By the way, obviously the Celtics won all those championships in the 60s, right? Bill Russell, no one's going to take away the greatness of Bill Russell, the greatest, you know, championship winner in sports. I mean, he won in college. He won in the Olympics. He won, you know, he won as a coach. He won as a player. Bill Russell did it all. I mean, he's a top four athlete in the history of North American sports of all time, in my opinion. But those Celtics teams, you know, it's a different sport. They were winning 58, 60, 62, 65% of their games. The Patriots won 80% of their games, again, a different sport, 80% of their games every year for 20 friggin' years, Kevin.
Crazy.
It's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing. And Tom Brady, as we saw last year, was the linchpin of that. He is the architect of it. He was the missing link. And I know this comes across as you know, minimizing the Belichick legacy or Belichick's, you know, greatness as a coach. Bill Belichick was 42-58 as a head coach the day Tom Brady stepped on the field in 2001. He had coached 100 games, exactly 100 games in his NFL career, a full career for most coaches, and he was a 420 coach. He was a 420 coach. With Tom Brady, he was an 800 coach. And then last year, you know, they stepped back, right? Last year, they were almost a 420 team, right? I mean, that's what Belichick has done without Brady. So to me, I've always said it from the beginning, it was Brady's dynasty. They became great the day he stepped on the field. They went down the tubes the day he stepped off the field. The team he went to became great the day he stepped on the field. It's not a coincidence. It's Brady, 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 Brady. Belichick, as great a coach as he is, was made the greatest coach, arguably the greatest coach of all time, by Tom Brady. The stats don't lie. The data doesn't lie. That it all moves in lockstep. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. There'll be a lot of talk. There'll be a lot of talk about that debate. I know not everyone agrees with me. There'll still be people who will say, you know, well, no, Bill Belichick did it. Tom Brady was lucky to end up with the Patriots. And Tom Brady was lucky to end up with the Patriots. He was. He was lucky to end up in that situation. I think he'd be the first to say that. But, you know, to go from to create the greatest dynasty in the history of sports, it was on Brady's back. And it'd be interesting to see how those two teams do this year. We're going to see this further divide. If the Patriots are, I don't know, what is that, week four, week five, Kevin, that
week
they
four,
play?
Week four.
Week four? So, if the Patriots are 0-3 and Tampa Bay 3-0, it'll be a whole different, you know, we'll have we'll have a whole different discussion at that point, right? So,
and if you're just tuning in, we're joined by Kerry J. Byrne, we've had many conversations with Kerry about football, a sport that, you know, he knows intimately and is willing to talk about it, and, you know, has had stats at his fingertips over the years that he has shared with us. It's interesting you mentioned Tom Brady, the architect of Bill Belichick's success. What's interesting is that before that it was Drew Bledsoe, and you thought that it was a Drew Bledsoe, a number one draft, he was a first round draft pick, picked number one by the Patriots, that they would have been able to go somewhere, but it took a hit by Mo Lewis, you know, to give Tom Brady his chance and his opportunity. With that, he has shined. And let's not forget, Tom Brady is probably a handful of plays away from being 10-0 in Super Bowl appearances. Am I wrong here?
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong at all. I mean, but some people will say, well, if not for a couple of kicks, Brady could have been, 4-6 in Super Bowls, you know. But yeah, think about it. In the three Super Bowls the Patriots lost, the Giants Super Bowls were one play games, right?
Yep.
One play in either of those games, the Patriots win both, including, the greatest of all, the Giants' greatest upset of all time. Imagine having that 19-0 team, what that would have meant for the legacy of Belichick and Brady. Beyond, it would have just been a whole nother chapter in the legacy. And don't forget, in the Super Bowl loss to the Eagles a couple years ago, Tom Brady set the all-time postseason record for passing yards, Kevin.
500
not
yards.
Super Bowl, not, I think, what was it, 505 in that game?
Yeah, yep.
Not the most in a Super Bowl, the most in postseason NFL history, which goes back to 1933.
Yep.
Nobody in a playoff game, in a postseason game, ever passed for more yards, and the Patriots never punted, and they lost.
It's interesting. They
lost. They're the only team, I believe, in postseason history to never punt and lose. And that loss, which we just talked about the Brady Belichick thing, that is the Belichick loss. The offense was literally unstoppable. The defense couldn't make a single play. Their arguably their best pass defender, Malcolm Butler, the hero of a couple of Super Bowls earlier, sat on the sideline the whole game for reasons we still don't know. That is Bill Belichick's loss. Everyone knows that. Everyone saw it. Everyone knows it. No one is never answered for it. Not that, I mean, who can't make his decision? It's not War and Peace. It's a football game. But that was Bill Belichick's loss. Tom Brady did everything possible to win that game, including never punting, all-time record, postseason record passing yards, and they still lost. We're talking three plays away from being 10-0, but even that, like I said, contrary, miss a couple field goals, this team, Tom Brady's 4-6 in the Super Bowls, right? Which is still impressive, but no, it's a legacy. The one thing, I think the total number of wins now, we'll have to look at it. I think Tom Brady's total career wins now is 249. Number two is Peyton Manning at 200. He has 25% more wins than the second winningest quarterback of all time, a first ballot Hall of Famer. His win-loss differential is more than the total wins of all but three quarterbacks in NFL history. Lapping the field of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I mean, it's somebody, like you said in the opening, somebody will come along, Kevin, someday as good as Brady, matches those records. But right now, he's so far above and beyond anything that ever came before. In terms of career stats, postseason stats, certainly, and most importantly, the wins and losses, which are totally a function of quarterback efficiency, totally a function of quarterback decision-making, so far lapping the field of any player who came before. It's not even close. It's almost impossible to believe.
We get about 4 or 5 minutes left here in our conversation with Kerry J. Byrne. So I have to ask you, this newly rebuilt Patriots team, I don't know if you've had a chance to kind of evaluate, take a look. There's a quarterback competition, and the kid that they drafted, pick number 15, first round, Mac Jones, able to beat out, one-time Super Bowl, one-time NFL MVP Cam Newton and spending a lot of money in free agency to get a couple of tight ends and get some wide receivers and build up their defensive line. What do you see all of these moves translating into wins for the New England Patriots this season?
Hey, but just real quick, I was looking up something, Kevin. Can I backtrack quickly? I'll ask you a question, of course. That Tampa-New England game comes almost 20 years to the day after Tom Brady's first start in a Patriots uniform.
Wow.
Off by 3 days, you know, almost 20 years to the day after Mo Lewis knocked out Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah.
So Mac Jones, basically, you're asking how I think he'll fare in a Patriots uniform. Well, first of all, every rookie quarterback who comes in is supposed to be the next great thing, right? And very few succeed. I will say this, the numbers he put up in Alabama last year, and again, everyone says, oh, it's Alabama, they get more talent. Yeah, no, they do. They get better wide receivers. But wide receivers are useless without a quarterback to get them the football. The numbers he put up last year were crazy, silly, sickening, hard to believe, never before seen, even by all the great quarterbacks that have come out of Alabama. I'm just looking at him right now. 41 touchdown passes, 4 interceptions, 4,500 yards, over 11 yards per attempt. It was almost as if there was no defense in the field. It wasn't that long ago. Quarterbacks couldn't put up those numbers in practice with no defense in the field, Kevin. It was sick numbers. And what we saw in the preseason was a very efficient, high-percentage quarterback. And what did Tom Brady excel at? Efficiency, high percentage, little mistakes. Those are the things more important than a big gun. You know, everyone always marvels about, oh, this guy's a gunslinger. Gunslingers never win anything. You know, it's the efficient, targeted, smart decision-making quarterbacks. Quarterbacks win with their head first. Every quarterback in the NFL can throw the football. They can all throw the football. None of them have a bad arm. People say, oh, he has a weak arm. He doesn't have a weak arm. He's in the NFL. The difference is decision-making ability. The decision at that level is mental. Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time because he was the smartest quarterback of all time. We saw it the day he stepped on the field the first time 20 years ago. If Mac Jones has those decision-making capabilities, if he has that efficiency we saw in college and we saw in preseason, which doesn't matter, he can be a star quarterback. He can be the team that makes you, if not great again, competitive again. But I hate to be one of these guys that, oh, he's going to be great. We don't know. The NFL history is full of guys that came out of nowhere who became successes, full of can't-miss kids who struggled and didn't, you know, whatever. But I do like his decision-making. I do like his efficiency. I do like what seems to be his intelligence. If he can withstand the heat and the pressure and the physical pressure and the mental pressure of playing NFL quarterback, he definitely has shown the tools it takes to win at this level.
Last question, as we have just a couple of moments left here, but I want to get your take. Does Tom Brady, do you feel in your gut, Tom Brady, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, do they have what it takes to go back-to-back and give Tom Brady yet another ring and probably a reason to finally walk away?
They absolutely do. I mean, they absolutely do. The defense came alive last year. They have Tom Brady. They have the guy, the most proven winner in sports. They have a lot of young talent on that team. They have, especially on defense. I'm not predicting they're going to win the Super Bowl, but yeah, like I said, the NFL is very simple. You have the best, most efficient quarterback. You're usually the best, most efficient team. And they are still in that game. The only thing keeping Tampa from being a repeat contender is if Tom Brady slips, and he's going to slip. And I'm never going to be the guy. He's proven he's earned the ability not to have his demise predicted. I'm not going to predict it, but it is going to happen. If that happens this year, then no. But, you know, they're not going to compete. But if he's still that guy who everyone always discounts early in the year and then comes on at the end, then, yeah, they by all means. I mean, I was shocked when the NFL did his top 100 players of all time, and he was number 7.
Yeah.
And Aaron Rodgers, that overrated clown from Green Bay, the guy who can't win a big game, the guy who never comes up huge in the clutch, the guy who can't mount a comeback victory, ahead of Tom Brady, after Tom Brady just ran a gauntlet of the greatest quarterbacks of all time in the postseason last year and beat all of them and played better than all of them to win the Super Bowl. You know, who is the quarterback in the NFC that scares you, that gives another team a leg up on Tampa? Right now, they don't exist. Right now, it's Tampa's Super Bowl. I would say this, it's Tampa's NFC championship to lose.
Last thing I'm going to say to you as we wrap this up right now, and that is, even if Tom Brady does slip, I think Peyton Manning proved Super Bowl 50. It doesn't have to be, you know, the quarterback doesn't have to be the guy who wins it if you have a great defense and you got great complementary players around you.
Well, that wasn't a weak defense. That just wasn't a good defense. That was an elite defense. Yeah. They overcame. They did overcome Peyton Manning's poor performances that year. At the end of the day, he did what he knew he had to do and not make mistakes. Again, you can win in the NFL if you minimize mistakes without being spectacular. And Peyton Manning was smart enough to win without trying too hard, right? And let the defense carry them and don't make the mistakes that put the defense in a critical situation. But that was also an elite defense. That wasn't just a good defense. So it was a confluence of circumstances. I don't know if the Tampa defense is that good or will be as good as that Denver defense. But yeah, you're right. You can win. You can win under those circumstances, especially with a smart veteran quarterback who doesn't make mistakes.
And final answer, quick answer. How many wins will the New England Patriots have this season?
Eight.
Eight. Okay.
Eight. I'm talking about standing on the fence. I'm standing on the fence. I don't know if they'll be. I mean, it comes down to the quarterback. I don't know how good it'll be. He's a rookie quarterback. Eight wins would be a good start for this team.
I'm saying that they're gonna have 12 wins.
Hey, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I watch the Patriots. I follow the Patriots. I hope you're right.
I just don't know. I think the Patriots have built a hell of a defense, but we'll talk about this. We'll have you back on at midseason and evaluate things.
I hope to eat my words midseason when the 8-0 Patriots are marching up and down the field.
There he is, Kerry G. Byrd, our guest. That's all the time we have here this week. We hope that you've had a terrific Labor Day, a terrific Labor Day weekend. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton.